I'm so happy that we're gonna kill tens of thousands of us. Here's my water, Mr. TSA. Please take my water.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's September 10th, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation audio publication, episode 129.
This is No Agenda.
Coming to you from the Crackpot Command Center, located in the minimum security containment cell under actual threat of eminent domain in San Francisco, the United Republic of California, Gitmo Nation West. I'm Adam Curry.
And from what appears to be a 99-degree weather day here in northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the
morning. Yowza. Yeah, good to be back, John.
It's supposed to be hot today.
It's nice, though. I like it.
Yeah, it's going to hit 80 in the city.
That's perfect. I mean, that's why you live here, right? For the weather.
For the summer that happens anytime but summer.
Yeah, anytime but July. And actually, July wasn't even that bad.
No, this year wasn't bad. I've seen worse. It was still foggy during the fireworks as usual, and but it wasn't as bad as some of the Julys. August was pretty flaky.
Well, I wasn't here for most of August, so it didn't bother me.
Yeah, well, it would have.
Yeah.
So you're back, you're settled in, you got your machine hooked up, you're ready to go, ready to, and you must have been back in time to see the Obama speech.
Well, yes, of course. Actually, I'd like to mention, first of all, that if I had not known better, I would have said that I picked up a little bit of swine flu on the flight. I got back, and it may have been just a combination of jet lag and some other stuff, but I was running a fever the day before yesterday.
They let you into the country.
Oh, yeah. By the way, if you're running a fever, don't let on. Don't be like wheezing and coughing, because KLM definitely will kick you off the flight. That's documented. They've done that a couple of times. So, yeah, but just really a fever, stomach a little bit upset. Didn't you think I was a bit out of sorts when we had that lunch the other day? When I was...
Yeah, no, you've been out of sorts for the last couple of days.
Yeah. When I was hitting up the waitress.
In fact, when you... you were hitting up the waitress. And when you're coming in, you're kind of staggering.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have an oral or rectal thermometer, but I was definitely running a fever. And, you know, and so I feel much better today. I feel really, hold on, all kinds of dust here. I haven't been around for too long.
Well, you probably just picked up some bug on the plane. I mean, it's easy to get sick on these planes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
In fact, the funny thing is, you know, for people who don't travel a lot, when you all of a sudden, you know, get into a situation where you're traveling a lot, and you actually, I think there must be a bunch of airborne diseases that are just common to people who travel, because what happens is when you first start traveling a lot, you're sick all the time.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Every time you go anywhere, it's like, ugh.
And it's usually ear, nose, and throat. It's usually
some minor thing. It's like a version of the cold. And then after about, I don't know, 6 months, a year, a couple of years of doing that, you don't get sick at all.
Yeah, you kind of get used to it. But now this is an interesting point, John, because we all know that when you right now in these harrowing times, very troubling with the novel H1N1 virus ready to kill us all, it was very interesting to me to see how incredibly irresponsible, I tell you, our Congress was yesterday.
Oh,
as I was watching, I flipped back and forth. I was watching C-SPAN before the main event. And of course, when you really watch what's going on before the president started speaking, it is just like the Oscars during the commercial breaks. Everyone's schmoozing. Everyone's not just talking, but hugging and kissing. And how can we allow our president to kiss everybody in the room? Is this not a petri dish?
Including the men. I mean, what was that all about?
I mean, it's a petri dish for swine flu. And you can't tell me that out of that entire room of representatives and invited guests, because there were a lot of those as well, that not one person can possibly have the swine flu. I mean, the obvious answer is yes, of course someone has it who's there. And you know, why do they allow this? And by the way, I love HD, and I have never really seen this type of assembly in high definition.
Where you see all the smirking and
not just the smirking, but how about the gold, baby? How about the designer threads? I mean, these people are dressed up, and I'm telling you, it's just like the Oscars. And there is some kind of unwritten rule, apparently, about which women are allowed to wear red. Because if you're wearing red, then you are really important.
I wonder about that, whether it's a rule or whether they just do it. Because the red, the people wearing red, the women, and by the way, these same women would probably never have worn red when they were in high school.
No, and certainly not after Labor Day.
Yeah, exactly. And they, I mean, they just wouldn't have. And, oh, yeah, it's red. I mean, because it's a slutty color.
Yeah.
And so, but they wear them because it's a power color in Washington, apparently, or something, or it's a way you can be seen in the crowd. Oh, can you find so and so? Oh, yeah, she's over there in the bright red dress.
Did you see Sheila Jackson from Texas? She was wearing like a red with a big yellow thing wrapped around her head. You know, it was amazing. This crepe paper.
So the ones that the red powered chicks,
Of course, Nancy Pelosi,
Hillary
had one Clinton.
Here comes Hillary.
Yeah,
you know
she had the pantsuit, the red pantsuit. That was
I didn't see the bottom, but
how could you miss her bottom, dude?
Definitely with more fabric, let's say, than Pelosi. And then Sebelius came.
Oh, my God. She was completely – and she was wearing jewelry, John. Oh, her earrings were so massive, her earlobes were stretched down to her shoulders.
So anyway, I thought it was disgusting.
Me too. And the whole show – because it is really a show. First of all, it started like 15 minutes late. What's up with that?
Which reminds me, play the Dennis Miller thing, right? That clip right there.
Hold on a second. Here we go. Dennis Miller. This is from his appearance on O'Reilly?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know much about birth and babies, but I do know this. When the 6 o'clock speech on how government's going to tighten up health care starts at 6:15.
Exactly.
I think that says it all, baby. This is beautiful karaoke.
And so he's absolutely right. But what got me even more is, so what happens is first, and this was about 3 minutes to the top of the hour, Speaker of the House, Pelosi, reads off.
Oh, wait. Play it. Play the Pelosi clip in the background as you talk.
Hold on. Where is it? What's the Pelosi clip? I don't have the Pelosi clip.
Oh, read the clip names.
Debt stinks. Escorts.
The joint session shall come to order.
Right. This is 3 minutes before the top of the hour.
Members of the committee on the part of the House to escort the President of the United States into the chamber. The gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Hoyer.
Right. So she reads off this entire list of names. And so these people who are already in the chamber now have to go out through the lobby doors, and then they'll come back in again, apparently in front of the President, who, by the way, stood in the doorway for at least 3 minutes before he was announced by two dudes. Did you see that? There's like two dudes now. Yeah. It's not just one guy. It's like one guy says, ladies and gentlemen of the House, and then the other guy says, the President of the United States.
Yeah.
And he's standing there like a boxer, you know, kind of in the shadows, and because he's very tall. And so, you know, the top of his head was kind of shadowed off.
I'm surprised they weren't playing music.
Exactly. The Rocky. Or da 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 da.
Or one of these things they do with a boxing match with the lights go down.
Exactly. Like wrestling match. That would have been better.
Boom, boom, boom.
But, you know, my personal feeling. And I like the idea of a no-nonsense president, who Obama certainly pertains to be. You know, wouldn't you just like come in and say, hey, right on, let's rock, let's go, I got a message for you, I got something to say, boom, let's get right to it. No, instead we're steeped in these ridiculous traditions. So after the escorts go out, then it's, ladies and gentlemen, the president's cabinet. That's when Hillary and Timmy Geithner and Sebelius and all the other red-suited women come in. And then there's applause all the time. And then there's applause. And then the president comes in and he hugs
like
and he kisses everybody.
It's like being in high mass at St. Patrick's.
I'm telling you. And then he gets up behind his teleprompter spot. And then there's more thank you. And then we have Pelosi, who has to say, it is my high privilege and distinct honor to present to you the President of the United States. By the way, why doesn't anyone say the President of the United States of America? Why is it only the President of the United States? Is there a reason for that?
I never heard it. I don't know. I never thought about it. Is she still chatting in the background there on that?
Another thing that bothers me to no end. She's always saying something. She's always like, she's got these like half one-liners. And she'll say it to Biden, you know. And I wish I could lip read, although she doesn't have a lot of lips to read. You know, because she's saying something continuously. These little like side comments. It's just as irritating as when Letterman or Leno or O'Brien has a guest, and then okay, we're going to go to commercial, and then they lean over to each other and they say something that you can't hear because the mics are closed. It's that annoyance that really gets
me. Yeah, no, you know what? I agree with that. And actually, Letterman does it when they come out. He whispers something to him.
Yeah, it's like, you know, which, hey,
by
you
the
look
way,
high.
Obama did with Hillary.
Yes. He did two things. He kissed her and then said something, and she laughed, and they hugged.
Yuck.
And of course, the mics are never on down.
Watched the old Larry Sanders show,
yes, I love that.
You know, they would actually.
It was all about that. Yeah,
the conversation. There would be all kinds of weird stuff.
That was the best part. Absolutely. So, yeah. So that stuff really. And watching a lot of it in high definition, which means I did have to switch between C-SPAN, which is not high def. And I think I switched over to MSNBC, which had a lot of the down-on-the-floor camera feeds they were using, except they had the annoying people talking over it, so you couldn't hear anything.
Well, I actually was going to watch CNN, but then I decided, well, let's go mainstream. So I watched it on CBS. I have a clip there, by the way, showing you the shallowness of CBS, the Katie Couric clip, which is during the beginning of the just before the speech began, if you'd play that.
To see how devoted he is to the issue, but he wants conservative Democrats and Republicans to see that he is leaving the door open for a possible compromise. Another
Chip,
big issue that has yet to be settled. Sorry, go ahead, Katie.
I was just going to say we should mention that Mrs. Obama is standing beside Vicky Kennedy, of course, the widow of Senator Ted Kennedy, whose presence is so sorely missed during this health care debate. Go ahead, Chip. I'm sorry.
It certainly is, and she's also with a group of people.
That's just like E! Entertainment when they do the Oscars.
Yeah.
That's the kind of color commentary E! Does when there's an award show. And it's just like, you know, enough already. This was billed as serious business. The president is addressing the Congress, addressing the nation. You know, I think we could do a little less of the show around and just get down to business. And he didn't need 50 minutes to do this entire thing. He could have cut it down significantly. My personal feeling, although.
Oh yeah, no, it was too long.
Yeah,
way too long.
Although, as basically representing brand Obama, I think he did a very good job. He, of course, you can shoot holes in every single bit of the speech, and I'm sure we'll do some of that during today's No Agenda. But in general, if I was just sitting there and I was just, you know, just Joe Schmo kind of concerned about all the things I've heard, and I'm not going to town hall meetings, and I'm not, you know, pissed off, I just kind of want to get on with it, and I'm looking at my health care bill, I would probably say, eh, all right, yeah, guy seems to be on track. I think it was a reasonable little story he had.
I thought it was a good speech. I mean, it was an Obama speech. You know, it was well done. I mean, I think some of the points he made were outstanding. I think he did it well. And, but you know, when you analyze it after the fact, it's like everything else. I realize that Obama's one of those guys. He's reminding me of guys like Matt Millen, who was the general manager of the Detroit Lions. And he also reminds me of, I've talked about this before. We had a publisher at PC Magazine for years at one of the magazines the magazine was always failing to perform. But this guy was the only guy that was never fired. So I go in and visit with him because they would fire people if they weren't performing. But this guy was in forever. So I go in and meet with the guy, and I walked out of there. I swear to God, it was not his fault.
That was great. Yeah, the guy's cool, but then you go home and you went, hey, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. This guy has buffaloed me. And so
exactly.
And Obama apparently is one of those types of people. He has the ability to buffalo an audience. I mean, because he's a smooth talker. Let's face it, he is a smooth talker.
Yeah, totally. And
but when you start analyzing the speech, or somebody else does who just hates him, usually there's always somebody that won't listen to any of it. When they start deconstructing it, you realize that, in fact, yeah, he didn't say this. In fact, there was a guy sitting in the audience, which nobody commented on, you know, even though they commented on
the guy who always introduces the bill at every session?
No, the guy who's – no, I don't know who this was. No, I don't know who this was because they never – they only focused on it for a minute on one of the stations, and I saw it twice, and I saw it in a – the guy had a sign in – a congressman. He had a sign in his lap that said, "What bill?"
I didn't see that. That's great.
Yeah, and what it meant, of course, was what bill is Obama talking about? Is he talking about the Senate bill, the bill out of the Finance Committee, the bill in the House? And nobody brought it up that he's just generalizing.
Yeah. Shouldn't that technically have been which bill instead of what bill?
I think it said what bill.
But technically, it should have been which bill. That would have made more sense. We can go through a couple of these things, but I realized after a couple of people sent me this article from the Wall Street Journal that we've really been focusing on the wrong things. The focus has been on death panels. The focus has been on killing grandma. All of that has really been a distraction, and it kind of hit me this morning after reading this article. I think it's an op-ed. I'm sorry. In the Wall Street Journal by Mark Mix, and its title of it is "Read the Union Healthcare Label." Subtitle: "Get Ready for Detroit-Style Labor Relations in Our Hospitals." And you and I both know, as we discussed many times, that President Obama, of course, the way elections in America work, and this is no secret. You get huge donations from special or just interest groups. Such as Wall Street, President Obama received more money than anyone from Wall Street. Well, he basically took care of them with all the bailouts. So that was done. That's been repaid. And he got huge support and money from the unions. And so now all of a sudden it's starting to click in my head, so he did do a little bit of stuff for Detroit, bailing out the auto industry. But really the unions, and this is something I need your expertise on to understand it. The unions, of course, in my mind, although I'm actually a member of a couple of unions, are really about power at the end of the day. And from what I understand from this op-ed, and there are a couple other articles that we probably should discuss that go along with it, what a lot of the healthcare bill, if we're talking about HR 3200, which was, I think the one that everyone is usually analyzing and talking about, Section 225A grants Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius tremendous discretionary authority to regulate healthcare workers under the public health insurance option. Monopoly bargaining and compulsory union dues may quickly become a required standard, resulting in potentially hundreds of thousands of doctors and nurses across the country being forced into unions. So now shit is starting to click in my head. I'm like, oh, of course, this is why the SEIU is at all these rallies, because the idea is to grow the unions by forcing medical personnel into them.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
And if you look at some of the data, let's see. Consider
that makes sense, because that's why the SEIU is so gung-ho for this bill, because that's the union that would benefit the most, and that's the union that's directly associated with ACORN.
Exactly. So you've got all of these big labor, I guess. We talk about big pharma. Big labor is probably just as evil as big pharma, in my personal opinion. And, of course, this is all about union dues. I'm a member of AFTRA, I'm a member of SAG, and really there's only really two reasons that you, well, there's three reasons that you're a member of these unions. One, you can't get a gig in mainstream radio, television, or film if you're not a member of the union. It's a catch-22 for SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, because you can't get into SAG unless you have a speaking role, but you can't get a speaking role unless you're a SAG member. So basically you have to be nominated by the production company, which is why it's very hard to get a gig in film, because there's this kind of this catch-22 scenario. Then you have AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. You can get into that no problem. You pay your dues. And what do you get for it in return is a standardized contract. So you have the set fee for an hour of radio or an appearance on television. It's really broken down into pretty minute detail. And back in the 80s, when I really relied on it, you got healthcare, which was, not to be underestimated. But when you look at mainstream radio, television, and film, highly unionized, you've got to ask yourself, is it good or does it suck? So I think personally, it all sucks. Television sucks. Radio generally sucks. You know, film is, you know, it's pretty much sucks. And this is the result of, I think, it being unionized. There's huge control over who is in it, what they do, and you basically just pay these dues all the time, and they can tell you when to not show up for work and to strike.
Yeah, so what's your point?
Well, I guess the question is, although totally legal under the Constitution to unionize, is unionization a good thing? Do we want big unions in the United States? Do we want our entire healthcare industry to be unionized? What are the pros and the cons?
Well, I don't like the idea of the healthcare system being that unionized, because obviously you can put the screws to people. I mean, if you think healthcare is expensive now, I mean, it could really go up. I mean, it's not going to go down. The unions aren't going to help people save money. I'm just fascinated. I think unions had their place in time, and they became, I wouldn't say they're corrupt organizations, because I've been in various unions that are actually quite useful. But generally speaking, I think they're full of crap. They promise stuff that they don't deliver, and then they throw their weight around, and the guys who run the unions are spending too much money. The dues are too high for what you get. I mean, once in a while somebody goes to the shop steward and, you know, gets some justice because his boss is a jerk, which is the reason, you know, a lot of these people join unions, because you have a bunch of management schmucks that just make your life miserable. So what's the point?
Right. Yeah.
But for the most part, these things should be taken care of some other way. But unions are with us, and that's that. But now that you mentioned that unions involved, this explains the SEIU being so for this thing. And you're right. I think this whole thing's a scam. That's very interesting. You got me on that one.
Well, there's a couple more pieces to this. There's a piece of legislation that has been passed by the House but has been stuck in the Senate for a while, which has been totally not – and by the way, none of this unionization stuff is discussed anywhere, not on CNBC, MSNBC, Fox News, or anything. So this is part of what I love about this show, and this was pointed out by our listeners/producers, and so now we're catching on. Hold on a second, let's look into this. There is something that has been lingering, needing to pass, and is still in committee or discussion or God knows how it works, known as the EFCA. Have you heard of this, John? The Employee Free Choice Act.
Oh, yeah. No, this, right. This is the one where they want to eliminate the secret ballot.
Right. So they're calling it the card check bill. So the idea.
This is a free choice. It's like a guy, you have a guy coming up to you in your house, knocks on the door, and he says, you want to join the union? And he said, well, I'm going to vote on it when the ballot comes around. No, you can vote right now.
Yeah, you got to tell me right now in front of the entire class is basically what it is.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, I'm going to slip it in early. This is exactly what is described in Atlas Shrugged. I'm going to put this link up. I got to sell some of these books. This is exactly what is described, where you no longer have the secret ballot. You have to stand up in front of all of your coworkers and peers and basically say, I disagree, which of course is the shittiest situation to be in. So they want to eliminate the whole idea of a secret ballot. But there's a lot more going on here. As a part of this, I love the name, Employee Free Choice Act. As a part of this, if as an employer, and I am an employer in the state of California, you will not be able to say or do certain things under penalty of $20,000 to your employees. And I've run small companies, bigger companies. I've technically had a so right now, I guess anything under 500 employees is, from what I understand, is considered to be a small business. I've had a small and then either a medium or large business with 700 employees.
Huh, I wonder what would you call Vivek Kundra's company then that he had CEO? He had no employees.
I would call that a hobby, is what I'd call that. It's just not a good idea to have employees decide how you're going to run your company. It's just not. And that's essentially what it comes down to. Worse, I think, with what is the power that is being given to government now to rule over some of these union rules, i.e. what Sebelius will be able to do, is basically the government being allowed to run your business. That's the simple breakdown of what it comes down to. And so now I'm saying, whoa, wait a minute. This isn't really about healthcare. It's not really about insurance companies. It's about total takeover of all business. So it's not socialism, it's fascism.
Yeah, corporatism.
Corporatism, yeah, fascism. And
same thing.
Here's an example.
Yeah, it's fascism. That's a good point.
Well, here's an example of how well unionization works from the Federal Times. We have discussed that the U.S. Postal Service is in dire straits. They have a deficit of $7 billion. They've gone to Congress. They've said, oh, we've got to cut down mail delivery to 5 days a week. So, of course, the Postal Service is unionized. Well, it turns out that they have thousands and thousands of employees who they have no work for because they're, mail delivery is down by 12 to 15%. So what they're literally doing, this is a great article, and it'll be in the show notes at noagendashow.com. They literally put the employees into break rooms, 12 foot by 8 foot closets, which the Postal Service calls resource rooms. The postal worker employees call it holding pens or blue rooms. They literally sit there for 8 hours a day doing nothing because they can't be fired. They can't be laid off due to the unionization. So they just, and also I believe Obama and the Obama administration would never want these numbers to flow into the joblessness claims. So essentially they're just sitting there doing nothing, literally thousands of employees because there is no work for them. Meanwhile, the taxpayers being asked to bail them out. Because they have a deficit, because they have all these employees doing nothing. It makes no sense to me.
Interesting. Okay.
So that is where unionization will lead to, I believe. Because, of course, we'll have all kinds of – I don't think we'll have a doctors and nurses sitting around with nothing to do. But if this is the result – well, it could. But if this is the result – where the U.S. Postal Service is asking for a bailout, but at the same time, they have thousands of people who really just aren't working, literally. And this is crazy. They're not allowed to do anything in these break rooms, because they technically are at work, so they're not allowed to do anything. They're just sitting there. This is going to make these people crazy. They're going to go home and kill somebody.
Or go postal.
Yeah, go postal, totally.
So let's get back to the speech.
Okay.
Couple of things that I wanted to. I have a bunch of notes. That's the only reason I'm.
Well, before you do that, let's just make sure people know exactly what this program is all about. Here's what we do.
Our formula is this: we go out, we hit people in the mouth.
All right, Johnny, let's hit someone in the mouth.
Okay, so I thought that even though I don't think a lot of people picked up on it, but I was watching Obama's presentation and his prompter use. He was flubbing.
Oh, he flubbed a lot of lines. He repeated several lines.
Yeah. I think he was nervous.
I think he was nervous. I think also the speech was probably changed multiple times because that's usually the kind of mistakes he was making, like rereading a line or saying I will instead of I would. There was a you will or you would thing in there. See more like a formatting issue where you read through a speech that's going to be on the teleprompter. And the best way to do, of course, is to actually read. I'm sure he has a teleprompter in the Oval Office because the best way to do it is to actually read it because then you get kind of used to the spacing on the teleprompter.
Yeah.
I believe that some of the spacing changed. So when he was expecting a new line to start, maybe it wasn't there or was already there. It was clearly, for me, it was a part nervousness. And by the way, who wouldn't be nervous? That's like a huge gig, dude.
Yeah, but he's done it before and he looked less nervous before.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of changes over the past, probably the past 24 hours.
Now, also, I noticed that Rangel, that the guy in the audience, was glowering constantly about something.
Rangel?
And I couldn't figure out what that was all about.
Who's
also,
that?
But Rangel's that guy, he kind of talks like this.
I don't know who that is.
Okay, well, you would when you saw him. He's a troublemaker. And then the up and down, up and down, up and down applause, up and down and up and down. You know, I swear to God, he was at a Catholic high mass.
Yeah, that's another part of that. Just, you know, we should time it. I'll bet you half of the entire show, let's just call it a show, is applause. It's just applause. And
But it was applause with a standing ovation.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
That's idiotic.
Yeah.
Now, then again, of course, on the other side, the Republicans sat there, and so it was CBS. Oh,
they were not getting up a couple of times. They cut to them, and you saw them.
No, most of the time they
down.
Weren't getting up. I mean, yeah. Some of them were kind of intermixed, but the 90% of the times they weren't getting up. But the CBS would cut. You know, Obama would say something, and then the Democrats would go crazy and clap, and they'd cut. Usually that Boehner guy is the guy they had the camera on,
yeah.
Or Boehner, whatever his name is.
Boehner. I think it's Boehner.
Boehner. Because he had his arms folded and he looked gruff, and so Obama says it's for the good of the nation and for the good of the children, and then all the Democrats would stand up and clap, and he'd be sitting there with his arms folded, and they'd make him look like an idiot. Yeah. What do you hate kids?
Yeah.
So I thought that was just bad. Yeah, that was very slanted coverage. CBS and NBC is they're over the top with this kind of thing. Anyway, so then they had the one moment, of course, in that where Obama starts talking about the
illegal aliens.
Illegal aliens, and they get booed. First he gets booed.
Yeah, that
and
was
then
cool.
Some guy yells lies, this guy Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, that was Wilson?
Yeah, and so Pelosi and Biden look over there and glare at him.
Yes, we're going to give you two to the head, you dick. You're on the list. You're on the list now. Yeah.
Now, there's a couple other things. I have to give him kudos on one analogy that I thought was really a winner because I haven't heard it before, and it was specially written for this speech, where he's talking about private health care insurance and then the public option, and he uses the analogy that just because there are public universities doesn't mean there's no more private universities. They do compete in the real world. And I thought that was like a really good analogy.
Yeah, although it made me immediately think of our discussion from the last show where all these public universities are making off with tons of dough.
Yeah, I know. They're ripping us off.
They're ripping us off. But okay, yeah, the analogy was there. But that's immediately I thought of like, oh my God, man.
Yeah, that means everyone's going to rip us off. Instead of just the private universities ripping us off, you'll be getting ripped off by the government. Too.
Yeah.
But I still thought it was good. And I got some other notes, which I'll go through. But he did bring up a little bit of Mel Prey. He finally got the Republicans.
Yeah, the tort reform. He got kind of slipped it in.
Slipped a little tort reform idea in there. And so
just a quick explanation. The tort reform would basically be a limit. Not really a limit, but
a cap on malpractice like we have in the state of California.
Right. Well, it's not really going to be a cap, but it's going to be if you bring a lawsuit, which apparently would be frivolous, then you would have to pay the legal fees of the defending party.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'd be caps too. So anyway, before the show, that everybody, Lou Dobbs and everybody, were going over the pieces of the speech that they had passed out to the media. And one of the observers said, well, you know, anything that they pass out in advance has got something in it that is, that's some thematic thing you have to check into. But one of the guys pointed out a little catchphrase that apparently Obama's been using. I haven't caught it, but he pointed it out, and it was used in the speech. And it's when he's talking about, you know, some trend or something. He uses the term, not this time, not now.
Yeah, it was, he actually started off with that, which, by the way, the news outlets clearly had the speech before the speech started because I saw that quote already rolling on lower thirds on the scroll before the president even walked into the chambers. So the idea was, he said, this has been brought up by many, many presidents, and it's going to stop with me, essentially. But they had the speech before it started.
Had pieces of it. They didn't have the whole thing.
Oh, of course. Give the news media the choice sound bites, the quotes. Of course, yeah.
Now, the thing that got me about the speech was, what was this Ted Kennedy death letter? He goes on, those of us who knew Teddy, and apparently he got a death letter, you know, a letter not to be opened until I'm dead, from Kennedy, yeah. Which we could reveal now. You know, it's like he's the Pope or something. He's got some, you know, some vault he gets to open.
Is there a copy of that available somewhere?
I don't know. I think the whole thing was a scam, to be honest about it. But
well, it's highly disputable, that's for sure. Ted Kennedy death letter. Let me just do a quick search.
But it was near the end of the speech when he was pulling his Reagan style of public speaking out with these personal anecdotes about this person and that person and Ted Kennedy's death letter.
I want to know if you said anything about Chappaquiddick. That's what I want to know, if that's in the death letter. Oh, and by the way, I totally boned her. You know, something like that would be funny.
You can send your email to Adam.
Please do. It doesn't matter. We're not going to solve anything. What's going on here, John, is It's a mass, and of course we've been conditioned this way, but really we are in a mass vibe of, everyone should be treated fairly and we have to have a beautiful world, and part of it is your generation's fault, actually. And so we've been conditioned into believing that, you know, we can have all these things and everybody can live in peace and harmony and it can all be good and not only will we all be taken care of, but you actually won't get sick and we'll fix everything. And that's just not reality, you know, and we all have to chip in for the poor sods. And, you know, this has been proven just not to work. It's just not the way life works in general. And of course, you've always got these characters in there who will take advantage of this feeling, this vibe that the universe wants of everyone to be happy and live in harmony, and they'll take advantage of that for their own personal benefit, gain, and power. And this will just end it can only end in a couple of ways. None of them really pleasant. But it doesn't work. It just doesn't work this way. You've got to have losers and winners in life. That's it.
So the we just
thanks,
hit
thanks for your
the
response.
thanks for the words of encouragement.
No, it's Atlas Shrugged. Read it.
So, you know, if you keep mentioning I'll put a link up with a link to my affiliate.
Why don't you read it? Why don't you just take?
Yeah, I
a
got
day.
Nothing better to do than read that book that's a rewrite of her Fountainhead book, which I read.
Go read Atlas Shrugged. It's different.
So you read The Fountainhead?
I've started it, yes.
Huh, sure.
I have started it.
I'll document that.
Yes.
So I've got this clip here called Obama School Speech. What do you think that is?
Well, I would presume that is about Obama's speech on September 8th to the school children of the country.
Oh, right.
Duh. Wow, no clues in the title there.
Forgot about that.
So, no clues. This is like your death letter.
I can't remember it.
This is your death letter. It's like, I got to remember to say something about the school speech. Okay.
Okay, so the school speech. I want to get that in before, because I think we're beating this other thing up.
Yes, I got some other things to talk about.
This is an interesting little observation that, you know, these right-wing talk cable shows, which Obama condemned on his main speech.
Oh,
which,
really? Yeah, he condemned them all.
Yeah, it was great. Which does nothing but just jack up the ratings. But anyway, so this is Hannity, who, like, you know, by the way, the people out there should know that these guys, especially on the cable shows, they don't really do it. The two of us do more work than those guys do.
and make 1/100th of the money.
Yeah, we make almost no money, but we do all our own work. These guys have staffs of writers who dig this stuff up, and they get some pretty good material. I mean, the best example is Glenn Beck, who used to do a radio show where he was just yakking away. He's a dummy, to be honest about it, but he's got, with a staff of writers, he's a genius.
He looks like one gene away from retardation.
It's just not what, you know, but I'll tell you, he's got good stuff because he's got good writers. Well, this is a good example of good writing, digging up something very interesting. And then Hannity, who can't really say anything without having snide comments within the sentence structure, which I find slightly annoying. But at the same time, he gets his point across. Play the Obama school speech. I thought this was interesting.
Today, President Obama addressed school children across the country. Now, the speech was praised by the mainstream Obama mania media and drew little attention from the Democratic majority on Capitol Capitol Hill. But as Byron York of the Washington Examiner points out, that was certainly not the case back in 1991. On October 1st of that year, President George Herbert Walker Bush spoke to students at a Washington area junior high school. And unlike the anointed one, President Bush was slammed for holding the event. Now, the very first line of a front page Washington Post article the very next day said, quote, "The White House turned a Northwest Washington junior high classroom into a television studio and its students into props." And that's not all.
Well, and I is there more to this? Because I do want to say something about that.
Yeah, he's got a couple more little pile-ons.
Well, what I did see some of that. What I found to be interesting when I looked at the school auditorium is that over to the left, there was, and I don't know if this was by design or if this is just how it works in large crowds, but it seemed like all of the African-American students were all in one section. One section for one camera shot. That's the way it looked to me. If I were directing this, which, of course, this is highly produced and directed, I probably would, if I had the same agenda, I probably would have done the same thing. It just appeared to me to be that way.
Democrats even called for a full investigation on how the speech was funded. They held hearings on the matter, and they forced the then education secretary, Lamar Alexander, to testify before a congressional panel. Now, call me crazy, but I don't expect to see a similar story on the front page of tomorrow's Washington Post, but we'll see.
Nah, they're always bitching about each other. This is what tires me, is the news media complaining about the news media. That's a circus. Who gives a shit?
That's what we do. Yeah. We like, yeah, you guys suck. Well you suck.
Let me, so no sooner had I mentioned on Sunday's show my frustration about the so-called liquid bombers in the United Kingdom from 2007. Yeah, the timing is fantastic because, of course, they had been acquitted. All of them had been acquitted due to a hung jury in the United Kingdom, Gitmo Nation East.
What? Can I stop you before you go there?
Sure.
Because I have one note on this pile of notes that I
that you haven't eaten yet.
That I haven't eaten yet. And I just want to, and it's just for background for the public out there, because I realized last night while I was watching Obama's speech that there's a question I should have asked you a couple of times in the last year, and I haven't done it. And I think the public would be interested in just a quick take on health care, public option health care in Holland and Great Britain, both of which you have experienced personally.
Yes.
What about it? Is it any good?
No. The okay. Well, no. There's two hands. No, in the United Kingdom, no, it is not good. There are you wait an incredibly long time for necessary operations. There are very long waiting lists. It is, of course, good that if you just want to go see your general practitioner, you can get in. You can get an appointment. It costs you essentially almost nothing, or it costs you nothing. Meds are, you know, £5, regardless of what the actual cost may be. So that part is good. But if you are actually in need of something, forget about it. I've gone private many times for my family to get, you know, my wife, ex-wife, I should say, needed an emergency appendicitis removal.
okay.
Elmer. She was misdiagnosed for a year, and then, you know, it was really dangerous. And luckily,
yes, I remember when she was misdiagnosed.
Yeah,
she was,
and I was able to take her private, and you know, considering her condition, might have saved her life. Who knows what could have happened if her appendix had exploded? That would have been pretty bad. In the Netherlands, prior to a 2008 change, where there was basically a single payer type option, and the doctors and pharmaceuticals had limits on what they could charge for services and products. I think it was in general reasonable, although the same applies. The idea of a death panel, the idea of, hey, you know what? You're basically at the end of your life.
Service for you!
That is just a fact of how the system works. Now, they changed that in 2008. Everyone had to go to a private health insurance. And, of course, now that's out of control. Costs are rising. But that was a test, right? That was a beta test. Mm. So pros and cons. If you're old, no, I mean, you're going to die, and they're going to let you die because your usefulness has been used up. That's the way it works. I'm sorry. That's just the system. To be able to see a doctor and get your meds cheaply, very, very good. So there's pros and cons. You do have the
private backup, though. I think that's a good thing.
Right. So, and here's an interesting thing. I just got a note from I have worldwide private insurance. I am not a member of our company insurance scheme because I have this, you know, there's pre-existing conditions within my family. So, you know, I don't want to mess that up and switch around. They just notified me personally because they had read in gossip magazines that I have now permanently moved to San Francisco. They are dropping my coverage, even though it's a worldwide health insurance.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
No, of course not. But, you know, I think they're looking at the news and saying, dude, that shit's expensive over there. We don't want to insure that guy. So, anyway, back to the liquid bombers.
Yes, the liquid bombers. So the deal is that, you know, we've been following these boneheads, and they got busted for something. And then out of the blue, they apparently tried him again just to put – it seemed to me the whole thing was a publicity stunt to prove that they were right about banning these 100-milliliter liquids. And by the way, I was watching on one of the news shows. They actually had some guy build one of these liquid bombs.
I saw that. A little like a vitamin water bottle.
Yeah, and it blew off the side of a plane with it.
Yeah, but you see them put a little bottle in the – and I have the video linked in the show notes. He puts a little plastic bottle of like goop next to a seat inside the fuselage of this fake plane, and then they cut to the explosion. You know, there's no detonator attached to this thing. You know, it was clearly, you know, whatever he put next to that seat was not what exploded. But that's neither here nor there. So just to review briefly, all of them are acquitted of the of this alleged plot to take. Peroxide?
Something. It was pretty sketchy.
Yeah. What's the name of the chemical? It's used to bleach your hair.
Hydrogen peroxide.
Hydrogen peroxide. So they actually were in possession of hydrogen peroxide. They did not have tickets, they did not have passports, but yet these guys were going to get onto these planes and they were going to blow them up. So the jury could not convict them because there was just not enough evidence.
And by the way, the number of people they were going to kill is now up to 10,000.
Right, thousands of people. So no sooner had I said these guys had all been acquitted and it's basically a retail scam, which I still believe it is, because of course the retailers want to sell you a $7 bottle of water, they want to sell you all these toilet articles and aftershave and perfume, etc., all the stuff you can't take with you through that one simple x-ray machine, which, by the way, I can take all kinds of wires and batteries without any check whatsoever, and all it takes is a little bit of plastic bottle and some liquid and AA battery. Well, I got tons of AA batteries, so they don't check me for that. So they get acquitted. Now, I guess they don't have double jeopardy in the United Kingdom, so they say, hey, shit, that didn't work. Let's just get another jury and let's just do it all over again. So then they're able to convict three of these guys. And I'm thinking to myself, because, of course, I get tons of emails saying, you're full of shit. They were guilty. It's good. They were going to kill tens of thousands of people. I'm like, what was the difference? What happened between jury number one and jury number two? And I have found out what has happened.
So
the rule in the British courts is that you cannot use intercepted material as evidence, i.e. emails that you've intercepted. So they did a workaround, and they got these emails to be introduced as evidence to the second jury, not because they were intercepted, but they were taken off the Yahoo email server in America. So there's a difference between actually intercepting the email or going to Yahoo and saying, hey, dudes, give us these emails, okay? So that was the trick. Now, here's the emails, and so this is what convicted these guys, not the fact that they didn't have passports, didn't have tickets, hydrogen peroxide with AA batteries. I'm no chemist, but I think you need a lot more than the little bottle they showed. I don't know. It could be totally true. There's, you know, who the fuck knows? But here are the emails, and then here's what prosecutors said it meant. 4th of July, 2006. By the way, these are all emails to Pakistan, okay? Not to Afghanistan, not to Iraq, to Pakistan. Quote, "Listen, dude, when is your mate going to bring the projectors and the taxis to me? I got all my bits and bobs. Tell your mate to make sure the projectors and taxis are fully ready and proper. I don't want my presentation messed up." The prosecutor said that means taxis were code for knowledge and equipment because Ahmed Ali still needed some guidance. The word presentation meant attack. Next quote. "I spoke to my friend. He will soon sort the prices for the telephones. Everything is good, is going good here. We will need to send you some CDs and DVDs over to you soon. Don't forget to call me." Prosecutor said, "Over the coming weeks, surveillance officers see Sawar Ahmed Ali and Tanvir Hussein buying bomb parts." That's the hydrogen peroxide and the AA batteries. "The prosecution alleges that CDs and DVDs is a reference to martyrdom videos they expect to send out to Pakistan." Next, "Hi, gorgeous. Well, nice to hear from you. Your friend can go for his rapping concert rehearsal, but somewhere popular would be good. Make sure he goes on the bus service, which is most common over here." Prosecutor said, "That was said to mean that their aides in Pakistan had given the go-ahead for a dummy run to test airport security. The prosecution alleged bus service meant domestic American carriers such as United or American Airlines." And this goes on and on and on and on. Now, I'm sorry, but this is really taking it a bit too far.
That's an awfully elaborate code. I mean, it sounds like these guys are experienced mobsters that are talking to each other, knowing their phones tapped. And that's when they were, you know, producing. So why didn't, you know, if you, here's the question that I would ask. If these guys are sophisticated enough to create this elaborate code so they could do this kind of a scheme, even though, like you said, they had no passports or anything like that, why wouldn't they just encrypt the messages with some sort of, you know, a TrueCrypt or all these things you can get on your computers? I mean, they have email. I mean, encrypting is not difficult to do. I mean, unless they thought this was encrypting. And because, but these guys, by the way, didn't look that bright.
No, and this is because we've been conditioned by television drama series that this type of sleuthing and extreme deduction is valid, you know. So forget the evidence. Basically, these guys were convicted upon these emails. Here's another one. "Hi, smiley emoticon. Got some good news that will bring a big smile to your face. I have some nice files you will love. It will give you wet dreams after you see it. Ha ha ha. I have 15 suppliers to give Calvin Klein aftershave. One box of 50 is only £175. Which, by the way, sounds like they're running an illegal import
scheme. Yeah, gray market.
Yeah. "What it meant, according to prosecutors, this is the first in a series of confusing exchanges over the prices and quantities of aftershave and stock buying. The prosecution said this was all code for quantities and concentrations of hydrogen peroxide, commonly sold as hair bleach. The chemical was a key part of the bomb design." I mean, look, I'd fuck the terrorists, you know. I want, if any terrorist, fuck you. I want to kill you too. But this is bullshit. This is just bullshit. I'm sorry. It's BS. And this is what these guys were, and you know, it doesn't matter because no one looks into this shit. No one's going to look at what they were actually convicted of. It's like, "Oh, they were convicted. I'm so happy. They were going to kill tens of thousands of us. Here's my water, Mr. TSA. Please take my water."
You should use that for the beginning of the show.
I will. Let me just mark it. Let me
it's
mark
about
it.
Time.
It's about time. Yeah, let me just mark it. Boom. Done. Marked. Okay.
Yeah, no, I think your point's well taken.
So,
these guys are probably smuggling, you know, cheap cologne back. I mean, let's face it, in Pakistan, they use a lot of cologne.
And I don't want to generalize, but I'd just like to know, in order to make an explosive device with hydrogen peroxide, you know, what else do you need and how much else of it do you need? You look at that BBC video, and literally, I have here a bottle of vitamin water. It's the exact same bottle, which is 20 fluid ounces, 591 milliliters, is any concoction of hydrogen peroxide with a AA battery, as described by court documents. Is that enough to cause that type of a ruckus? And unless you're transporting, you know, some type of highly explosive fluid along with it, which probably would be too, it would probably blow up if you dropped your bag. You know, can you actually, can you pull it off? I mean, that's what I'm interested in.
There are things you could do with, by the way, if you wanted to make a small bomb, you could do it with a 100 milliliter limit if you were wanted to make some nitroglycerin.
Right. So all you have to do is put, you know, five different 100 milliliter bottles of shit in your little plastic baggie and it goes through and you're at the same place. This is no thwart.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's not a thwart at all. They should either ban all liquids. Tell people they can't bring anything on the damn plane. Actually, what they'd like to do is just basically make sure you go on the plane by yourself and they strap you down for the whole flight and, you know, and then throw food in your face and, yeah. You know, maybe feed you, and then they get you off the plane.
Awesome. No knife for you.
Yeah, that and the plastic knife. That's another classic.
Yeah, I do like the KLM pilots, though. Whenever you fly to or from the United States, they come on the intercom because the KLM, you know, they're Dutch, you know, they're a little laid back. They're smoking doobs up there in the cockpit. And the captain will always come on and say, oh, by the way, the American TSA has told us to tell you you're not allowed to stand around the toilets. It can only be one person at a time. But it literally is like, they've made us tell you this. So, you know, just we told you. Don't worry about it. Something interesting, which of course did not, nor will it hit mainstream, happened the other 2 days ago, I think, which is worth mentioning. And I think I mentioned this to you the other day, and you said no, I hadn't heard about it. So that means that it not only has it not gone mainstream, it never will. Charlie Sheen teamed up with Alex Jones, and they kind of played like a media hack. Which I don't think, I don't know if it was really executed properly. It certainly got me for a second, where apparently, or the story that that was released, was that Charlie Sheen had requested a 30-minute interview with President Obama, and that he was granted 20 minutes, and then Charlie Sheen wrote up a transcript of his 20 minutes with the president. And this 20 minutes included Charlie Sheen presenting every single piece of what I would, by the way, deem as credible evidence about government cover-up and government involvement in 9/11. And so it has his questions and Obama's answers. Now, of course, this didn't actually happen. It was just this is probably what it would have been. And the whole idea is you go to this 20-minute interview and there's all these links of this credible evidence that it was, quote, an inside job. And although I think a great attempt to bring some attention to the matter, now that we're almost 8 years after the fact, I don't think it's really going to hit home. In fact, I even saw Bill O'Reilly like call Charlie Sheen a pinhead and just played a little audio quote, didn't even explain what actually happened, what the whole scheme was. But I do think it's interesting, just to read through it and to look at the different links. I think I've said many times that, I'm not an architect. I don't know about thermite. I do know about aviation. And as long as the official 9/11 commission report contains extremely incorrect information about aviation and what airplanes can do, I don't believe any of it.
We know that. So
wait, I have a jingle for that someone sent me.
WTC7 won't go away.
I love it.
Oh, brother.
No, that's fantastic.
Hey, I don't know how to tell my baby.
WTC7 won't go away.
Yeah, WTC7 won't go away. That's one thing for sure. So here's an interesting story. This is your government at work again. What was the price of that website they're doing, recovery.gov?
There's two prices we know now. It was $18 million for recovery.gov and $53 million to secure the TSA's computer infrastructure.
Well, General Dynamics just won a $10 million contract to develop a network of websites aimed at influencing foreign audiences in support of the U.S. Special Operations Command.
Huh. Okay. How does that work? A $10 million? Can we just set up a WordPress blog for that?
I mean, please. It's a one-year deal.
You got to send me that link. I want to put that
with
in the show
four
notes.
12-month option periods, which means they can get more money.
Oh, yay!
For work on the trans-regional, this is a good one. I like this term. Trans-regional web initiative, a plan to synchronize all U.S. combat command websites designed to win hearts and minds.
Mm. It's a love fest. A love fest contract.
I mean, the only reason, what's his general, okay, here's the question on my mind. What the hell's General Dynamics doing developing websites?
Aren't
they a jet maker or something?
Well, you know, they've got this intern program and they need the interns to do something. So they decided that this would be a good one for them. It's horse crap, John.
Just and, you know, they're just going to job it out to somebody anyway and take $5 million.
Of course, yeah. And just, yeah, and give it to some, you know, two-man shop to build. Of course.
Why aren't we in on these deals?
Because we're too busy complaining about not being in on these deals.
The United States Department of Agriculture agreed last week to buy an additional $30 million worth, $30 million, by the way, worth of pork from the ailing pork industry for a total of $151 million purchased this year to compensate the supposed damage wrought by the emergence of the swine flu.
Yeah, I've heard about this. There you
what
go.
Kind of, how, all this tells you is how stupid the public is. Oh, my God, you can't eat pork. You'll get the swine flu.
Yeah. Yeah, and your point is? A lot of people have sent me this link, and I'm not quite sure what to make of it. I will do some more investigation. But in the past 3 days, there's been like 50 small aircraft incidents. And people are saying that something weird is going on. And I'm not quite sure. In the U.S. alone, that is. So I'm just making mention of it, which means that our listeners, producers will send me more information. I can delve
into
it.
Yeah, we need some help.
Deeper. Yeah, but it is interesting. It is higher than average. I mean, you know, and there's incidents. You know, there's just dumb stuff that happens. But that could be a number of things. It could be, for all I care, it could be the state of the moon, you know, affecting people's brains and then taking an idiot pill, doing stupid stuff. It's not like all crashes and stuff. But it is worth mentioning that that is definitely an interesting coincidence.
So I've got another clip here I want to play, which is I was actually, even though this was, I think O'Reilly did this one, it was taken as a kind of a lighthearted thing. I was actually distressed by this story because I don't understand why what he is going to explain it actually takes place. Hit NBC store.
NBC News continues to support the president just about every way.
I love that.
Their headquarters in Manhattan, the NBC store is selling Obama merchandise.
Yeah.
Dolls, shirts, mugs. You can get them all at the NBC store. Didn't see any Sarah Palin stuff there. I didn't see Bold Fresh, but they may have been sold out.
You know, this is a story from, I think it's at least 3 or 4 weeks old. I remember people sending me the link, and I was like, well, yeah, so what? You know, duh.
I find it distressing that a network that's a news organization behind it has got this kind of stuff for sale. I mean, what is the point?
Yeah,
are they, are they boosters for the president? Is that what the deal is?
Well, I don't know if it's any more distressing than that Obama Chia Pet commercial I see running everywhere.
I love that one. God.
That's like, huh? The Obama Chia Pet.
I've been trying to catch that one so I could get a clip. I keep missing it.
I do see, I presume, looking at the title of this clip, Debt Stinks, that you caught the same commercial that I did.
Yes, this commercial has been on over and over again. The problem with this commercial, we can play it, which, by the way, if you watch Lou Dobbs, he has apparently, I don't know if anybody's sponsoring his show at all. It's all, you know, either unions or special interest groups. There's no companies. And I think they bailed out on him or something. I think it's weird. It's almost like public service announcements. But this ad has been floating around. The punchline is Debt Stinks at the end. But the problem is it's very poorly produced. You can hardly hear the kids. But they are doing the Pledge of Allegiance to America's debt.
I love
it. And if
it.
You can kind of catch the words, if somebody out there can give us a transcript of the words, we'll put it on the show notes. But why don't you play it?
American taxpayers owe more than $500 million in interest payments every day to cover our government's debt. Much of that debt is owed to foreign governments. Go to defeatthedebt.com.
That stinks.
Have you gone to defeatthedebt.com? Maybe we can find it there.
No, not yet.
Yeah, that would be the first place to look. Defeatthedebt.com.
Anyways, I pledge allegiance to the debt of something to the Chinese government, who
it's owned. The Chinese government.
To who it's owed. I mean, the whole thing is hilarious. If
interest
you just
compoundable.
Understand it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So there's a lot. We'll have to look through this because I think they've got a lot of different versions of this commercial. So we can probably get a better version of it. Well, first of all, yeah. I mean, have you seen what's been happening? You know, as I was reading through, I think, either Wall Street Journal or Financial Times, and, you know, we're right now at a double whammy for the dollar. So at the very moment where people are saying, hey, wait a minute, let's get out of this dollar. And by the way, they seem to be going to gold, I might want to point out. At the same time this is happening, of course, we're printing up massive amounts of dollars. So what happens is it devalues. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, Ben Bernanke, he was so much the right guy to have in the Federal Reserve, because if you really want to blow up the economy, implode everything, you want to have the guy who is an expert on the Great Depression. It is textbook. It is exactly, it's the same blueprint. Exactly the same thing that happened is taking place now. And Ben Bernanke, with Alan Greenspan preceding him, and Timmy Geithner now carrying the baton, it's happening, and the dollar is going to drop more and more. It's now $1.44, $1.45 per euro. It's going to go to, they're already predicting $1.50. Of course, what that does, on the other hand, is it makes your oil go up. It's now 72, 73 bucks, you know, at a time where we have no jobs. You know, it's, and we are just spending and spending and spending money that we don't have. I mean, it's like, you said the legendary words to me the other day at lunch. Hey, this economy doesn't look good. doesn't seem like it's going to be real good.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
Yeah! So here's another thing that's depressing. Play the In Afghanistan clip. This is a guy. This is a piece of a story that was run on the network news, or. And they're out in the field in Afghanistan, and they found some. Oh, this is actually on 60 Minutes. I'm sorry, this is on 60 Minutes, and they're talking to this guy who casually says something that I thought was, like, of course they never question it or say what, but just play this short.
For the captain, seen here putting out the flames moments after the blast, it was the bloodiest day so far.
Nothing's easy. It's going to be a long fight. I'm not telling you that it's going to happen tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you it's going to happen next year. But, you know, it might be 12, 15 years from now, and we're still in Afghanistan.
What?
Well, so I'm glad you bring this up. So, of course, this is the necessary war, as our president calls it. It's necessary, and there's lots of question about it in Germany.
Tell me again why it's necessary.
Oh, it's necessary because this is where Al-Qaeda stems from. Bin Laden is still holed up in a cave, and they are still plotting to come over here and kill us. And there's plenty of news articles to back that up, that is the story. And I was just thinking about this Hamid Karzai. He is the president of Afghanistan. And actually, I have to correct myself. He did not go to school in the United States. He actually went to a school in India. And he is a native of Afghanistan. But, you know, there's always been these this talk about his brother, who was known as King Karzai. And, you know, he's been accused of, but I totally believe it, of running all the drug trade in Afghanistan. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so we went into Iraq. The first thing we did is we grabbed Saddam Hussein, right? And we eventually got him hanged. That's just the fact. Now, this Karzai dude, who has been in Afghanistan since 2001, he's been running the show there. We treat him, we kiss his ass all the time. You know, we got everyone over there. Hey, Hamid, how you doing? What's going on? And, like, how can this be? How come we aren't pressuring this guy to shape up his frickin' country? Well, because he's an obvious plant. And you said something at lunch again yesterday, John, which I looked up. It's not him, but his brother, Mahmoud Karzai, built a restaurant empire, starting in San Francisco, Boston, and Baltimore. This guy runs everything. He owns the Toyota dealership. He took over the cement factory, the only cement factory in Afghanistan, which, by the way, he did. All he did is he came in, put a bag full of $25 million on the table and said, and he was the only bidder, I'm going to take it over after the government had already confiscated it. So this is basically, he runs the whole show in Afghanistan. And if you don't go along with what he says, and you're within the government, and this is a link from the New York Times, fantastic article. The article is actually from March 4th. So, you know, this is just the stuff that the mainstream news media won't really delve into, although luckily it's being reported on. So we've got this trifecta of Karzai, who is in a completely protected presidential palace so that his hat doesn't get dirty and his cape. And it's protected by, of course, the coalition forces. You've got his brother running the drug trade, is Wali, is the King Karzai. You've got his other brother who runs all of the business, all commerce, and essentially is the mobster. And now it makes all so much sense. We've got the coalition troops protecting this gang of thugs from the Taliban, who are actually trying to get rid of all these assholes. So we are in there protecting the drug trade, which, as you know, is the way that Wall Street can shovel money in, because the only type of entity in the United States that can take money outside of the country without, you know, registering that if it's more than $10,000 are publicly listed companies. So we've got the drugs flowing back and forth freely. We know from Bloomberg that it's a completely commoditized industry. They can tell you exactly how much the poppy stocks are up or down. They say it's up, you know, production is up 22%. How the fuck do they know this? Because it's all registered, because it's a big scam. We are over there protecting this gang of thugs. That's
what's
going on.
How do you really feel? So my understanding is that restaurant in San Francisco that that guy owns is pretty good.
Well, that's the downside. You can't hate the guy because he's got a good restaurant. We should go eat there. Let's go eat there this week.
We should.
Let's go eat there, and we should ask questions. Hey,
by the way,
did Hamid come by lately? You seen him? What's his favorite spot?
Apparently, in the
spot?
Early days, right after 9/11, he was in the city, and I guess he rushed off for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, he rushed off to go assume his presidency.
And so there was a few news stories about it. They thought it was quaint that we'd have. And the way they played it, though, of course, is these guys were in exile running this huge chain of restaurants in Boston and San Francisco. And it was quite interesting.
Well, it's
I'm sure the food's good. Afghanistan food is
hot. Let's go eat there. We've got to eat there. So,
all right.
But, you know, when you just look at it all at face value, it just becomes so incredibly clear what is going on, you know, because there's nothing else going on in Afghanistan except drugs. You know, Bloomberg is tracking it like an oil commodity. I bet you somewhere there's a futures we can buy on it. You know, the Karzai is not being pressured. In fact, he was just reelected, or not technically reelected yet, but there's, you know, every single organization, every watchdog said, hey, there was ballot box stuffing, there was huge fraud. They're like, that doesn't matter. We're going to count those votes anyway. And what's his name? Holbrook, who is the special envoy, i.e. Azar, you know, he's been saying, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't count those. And, you know, they're afraid of them, John. I believe the United States government, the administration is afraid of these guys for a couple of reasons. One, they don't want to get the drug supply cut off, which, of course, is being flown back on military planes and transport. And they don't want to get banned from the restaurant. I think that's probably the number one thing.
No
service for you! You know, that would really, really suck because, you know, that Afghani food is really good.
Quite spicy.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking this is horse crap. And on top of that, it's all coming from Pakistan. You know, when are we going to go invade there instead of just sending unmanned drones over to kill people? I mean, that's lame. You know, that's like, if you want to go fight, go fight.
Let's watch this. Boom.
Yeah, go fight. You know, and they keep blowing up civilians all the time. And I thought it was Al-Qaeda. Now it's the Taliban. Why is the Taliban? Because the Taliban had completely obliterated the poppy fields. They got rid of everything. They had a couple of other radical ideas that you may or may not agree with. But hey, don't go live there, okay? I'm sorry, just don't go live there. Apparently, you can get out and you can do quite well in the West. You can come here, you can build a restaurant chain. So don't live there if you don't like the shit that they make you do. I love women. I love women's rights. I'm sorry, I can't change it. We got enough problems in our own country with women being suppressed. So let's concentrate on that first. But no, we're over there and we're protecting these guys. That's what it seems like to me. And Iraq. So did our president not say that he was pulling the troops out?
It's vague. I don't think he said. I think he did actually. He said they're going to be pulled out by 2012 or something like
that.
Right.
He is pulling the troops out, but he's replacing them.
Yeah, with guys that cost even more money.
Exactly. He's replacing them.
And
with,
by the way, when did the army have to be catered? I mean, it used to be in the green zone. If you're, they have these catering companies. They had those huge contracts.
They've got Burger King, John. Burger King and Pizza Hut.
Where's the KP? Where's the guy the
peeling a potato?
The sergeant of the mess hall. Whatever happened to these things? This is how you save money on these war efforts. This costs a lot of money to have all these private mercenaries and private catering companies and all this other stuff. No wonder this stuff costs. No wonder we're going broke. No wonder we are broke. This is why we're broke.
I have pictures of when I was at Basra Airport in southern Iraq when I was there in 2003. I was blown away. I was like, hey, let's go eat. I'm like, okay, and I had actually been in the Dutch Marines camp, and that was pretty much everyone has KP duty, and it was, really peeling potatoes and shit, although there was some catered stuff. And I'm like, whoa, Burger King, but with a sign, not just like a tent with like a Burger King, like a franchise right there. And a
pizza
hut. With the logo and everything. Yeah, I'm not kidding. And I'm looking for the... I'm looking for the link here, but there's in the past week another $485 million worth of contracts signed to send more contractors over to Iraq. Let me see. Why is this not opening up? Come on, Linky.
While you're doing that, I'm going to ask you kind of a rhetorical question. I was watching some of the C-SPAN this week. Mm-hmm. And by the way, which is the reason people should be contributing to this show, because we torment ourselves. I'm watching this thing. It's at the Steamboat Institute, and one guy's talking to another guy.
Oh,
one
I saw this, the Steamboat Institute. Fantastic. Yeah, go ahead.
But here's what gets me. There's a guy from the Galen, or a woman from the, or the guy, I don't remember, a guy from the Galen Institute, a guy from the Cato Institute at the Steamboat Institute, and they're all talking about this and that. Where did all these institutes come from, and where are all these guys, these blowhards, they seem to be manufacturing them by the ton, that sit around going to other institute events and one institute talking to another? This is worse than the government.
Well, this is how it works. That's what the CFR is, Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Steamboat, which, by the way, was hosted by Blakely, who I think is an interesting character. They sit
he's
around.
The only guy that wasn't a member of an institute.
Yeah. They sit around, they dream up shit, and then they basically get lobbyists to go and push through their agenda. This is how it works. That's the real government right there. When USAID, who, by the way, is sending millions to Afghanistan. We're sending millions to Afghanistan. They shouldn't get shit from us. If they're trying to blow us up, why are we trying to give them money? Boggles the mind.
You can use that as a clip, too.
Here, listen to this. This is my favorite link of the week. I need a jingle for that. Adam's favorite link of the week. We have finally, John, broken ground. Now, you think a website is expensive. We have finally broken ground on the Homeland Security Complex. Do you know how much this complex is going to cost? An office building, essentially.
An office building can't cost more than about... A good office building should run you about $150 million.
Okay, try $3.4 billion. $3.4 billion for a department that is only, 2 years old?
Well, that should piss off the other departments.
Well, listen to this. This is my favorite quote. So, upon queried why the Department of Homeland Security needs a $3.4 billion complex, Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano said, "It will help us hold meetings." It will help us hold meetings. It will help us build that culture of one DHS. This is more expensive than the Pentagon.
Why isn't the public up in arms about this sort of crap?
Because no one knows about it.
Why isn't the media talking about it? What is the problem with this country that people don't say, hey, this is bull. You're not building a $3.2 billion building. Because they're out there looking for ways to save money. Oh, look at that good person. They bought a box of popsicles. You have to take that off the budget. We're costing us tens of dollars as a popsicle.
As we say in aviation, John, while you're looking at all the little ship on the map, trying not to fly into it, you crash into the mountain that's right in front of you. That's the way it goes.
There's a nothing to see here jingle.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
So our job, if anything, is to at least bring these things into the topic of conversation. I know it's very difficult for people to get friends and colleagues and fellow students to listen to this program. We, of course, are deemed completely nuts, crackpots, idiots, not part of the program. But maybe you can just talk about some of the things that we discuss. We have links for all of this, and this particular story about the Homeland Security complex, it's a CNN story. So I believe that the people who are hypnotized and programmed by cable news media will take note of it. They'll take your link serious if it says CNN.com in the URL. But get the conversation started, because that's about the only thing we can do. And we do it almost as a public service. Almost, but
yeah, we did get some contributions, and I'm going to mention some names here, and I'm going to pound the pavement for getting more people to contribute. We do have a lot of listeners, and we only have a very small number who contribute. The rest of the people think that we can just keep doing this without their help. By the way, it's DUI-help.com for a contributor from a few weeks ago, and I said DUIhelp.com, which is competitor. DUI-help.com. Go check them out if you have a DUI. Anyway, we've got the competitive zone out of Bradford, Ontario, gave us $120.12. What do you think that means?
Give me the number again.
120.12. There's a lot of potential for sixes.
120.12. Shit, man, I don't know. It's a nice amount, though. I appreciate that.
I think that's we should get more of that. Yeah. Richard Baumgarten, Ontario, Canada, 50
bucks. You know what that is? It's a start, is what it is, John. It's a good start.
We need more. Adam Erz, his last name is spelled E-R, from Ankara, Turkey, for $67. By the way, these odd numbers that come in from Europe, I think, is because they give us euros.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's
and it comes in as like...
That's probably 3 euros. That's 3 euros.
So yeah, right, 3 euros.
No, that's I bet it's exactly 50 euros.
It probably is. So so he's from Ankara. We need more euros. 50 euros is all you need to give us. Anyway, in Ankara, Turkey, I think that's cool. We have a Turkish producer. Scott Waldher's $100 out of Minneapolis. Thank you, Mark Honigman from Victoria. Holland? Australia, H-O-N-E-G-M-A-N, I think. A Bauman Tillman, or Tillman Bauman, from Hampshire, England, $50.23. What do you think that means?
5320? Shit, man, I don't know.
5023, I'm sorry.
5023. I'm so lost on this, John. I really don't
think
know.
We're okay. These people will have to give us... Era Dudurian, that's it, from Trabuco somewhere. Don Chilton, I actually wrote
You're
this.
You're really butchering this today.
I am, Don Chilton in Pittsburgh. Lena, sorry. You know what it was? I wrote, you know my crappy handwriting?
You ate your notes.
Lena Nobuhara in Australia, and of course, I think we already named Bite Marks, which I still think is a great name for a company. Bite Marks, B-Y-T-E.
What does Bite Marks do, you think?
Well, website I think they're building? With B-Y-T-E-M-A-R-K-S out of Honolulu, they have to be a computer preparer.
I hope they build websites, and I hope they get an $18 million contract.
$18 million to build a WordPress site.
Drupal site.
We want to thank everybody for these contributions, and I want you to encourage you to continue by going to dvorak.org/NA and clicking on one of the links, or go to noagendashow.com or noagenda.squarespace.com and you know, contribute. We also have that we're still leaving the dinner open.
Yeah, how are we doing with that?
We're not doing as well as all the promises. I mean, a lot of people, oh, yeah, I'm in on this. And then the next thing you know is, well, like, I can't do it.
I can't come.
We're going to go until next Thursday. If we don't have the thing full by then, I have to cancel it.
And what do we have, like 3 people now?
2.
Of the 10? 2. Oh, boy.
See, so that's not good.
Yeah, we got to have at least 7 or 8, yeah.
8.
Otherwise, we're going to lose money on it. You know, this is not a money making deal.
We may change the model to something that's a little further out in advance and has more people at less money.
We're even taking commercial. You know, John was like, "Hey, when we're going to fly in your plane?" Like, dude, that's going to be way more expensive than the $79 special, the early bird special.
What does it cost to fly a little plane? Is it twice as much as commercial airlines?
Well, it depends. I burn 16 gallons an hour. So to Vegas, what's the distance between here and Vegas?
I think it's about 400, 500 miles.
So that would be about 2.5, 3 hours. So you're looking at 50 gallons. 50 gallons times, what is it now? It's probably about $4 for aviation.
It's $4 to $5, depends on the airport.
So it's going to be like 200.
And then that's one way.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's $400. It's kind of high when we can fly on this special.
But you,
for $60.
But you do get to smoke on board, which is kind of cool.
Well, for you.
Are we done with the donations?
Yeah, that's all we got. And I want to encourage people to continue. NoAgendaShow.com or Dvorak.org/NA.
Yeah, and we appreciate it.
Today's show, by the way, is worth the price of admission. I mean, the fact about the union scam that nobody's covering, which I think is outstanding analysis, is worth people sending us some money. And I'll tell you, you know, if you think about it, we do 3 hours a week, more or less, sometimes more, which is about the same amount as an epic movie that you'd pay $20 to go to, and you might go to those like 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 times a year, which is hundreds of dollars of entertainment value. I think we provide that much, and we also keep people, you know, it gives them something to listen to on their way to work. To people that are commuters, definitely should be paying us.
Yeah.
And we do not want to take subscriptions from them. We do not want to take advertisers because it turns into a fiasco. It corrupts the show. We're just not going to do it.
It's boring. And it's boring. Yeah.
And
it makes
totally
the show
boring.
Shit.
Yeah. It changes the pacing.
And then how can we laugh about commercials if we got our own commercials? That would never work that way. A couple of quick notes. H.R. 1207, the audit, the Fed bill, will enter into the hearings. So I guess that's hearings or committee. I'm not quite sure. Friday, September 25th, 9 o'clock, as promised. Barney Twinkletoes Frank has agreed to hold hearings on it. So that's good. That's a really good start. Although, John, you maintain that it'll never pass.
Oh, of course not.
But it's a good start. So at least we can get some conversation. Well, we'll get good audio clips. There'll be some, you know, we're going to get interviews and stuff like that.
We'll see.
I just wanted to mention finally what you haven't heard throughout this entire program, and that, of course, now I have to play it at least once.
He's a Mac Daddy. He pimps white women and black women. Obama is a long-legged Mac Daddy.
Although highly entertaining, we figured that would be pretty offensive to a lot of people, hopefully to some people in our very own audience. One of our employees, John, over at Mevio, Maggie, came, and you know, I have a great relationship with Maggie, who was, I shouldn't give her age, but she's older than 50 and younger than 70. And I think she's an ex-Black Panther, actually. She has threatened to kill me several times. And she said to me, and we talk about all kinds of crazy shit, and a lot of the stuff we discuss on No Agenda, and you know, and it's fun because she'll really push back, and sometimes, but she's a total Obama bot, and I kid her about it, and so we have a great relationship, which is really private, not part of the workplace, although they usually take place in the workplace. And she said, "Oh, have you heard about the LA Guns?" I'm like, "LA Guns? That's like a rock band from the 80s from the West Coast. LA Guns, apparently it's some mailing list that she's on, which is a part of the NAACP San Francisco chapter. And she forwarded to me, which I can't post, of course, because there's all these email addresses in it. She forwarded me this entire thread of NAACP members, I presume, who have now finally found Pastor Manning. And, oh, my God, the stuff they are writing. So she said, he's going to get killed. Where can I find someone who for five CDs will go and kill this fool? And this is the kind of stuff that is in this email. I mean, it's here. I'll just read this. Be sure to click on the link and check this black fool out. African Americans need to develop a strategy for dealing with educated, ignorant Uncle Tom steppin' feather suckers like this. With a PhD, a Bible, a microphone, and an audience, this is a dangerous man. And in the year 2009, he has the nerve to record this garbage. And the conversation I tried to get into with her, which was just impossible, was, Maggie, I understand, you know, the guy, obviously the guy is passing on a message which is not okay. Although it's interesting how he explains what he means by this. And you might want to, and I said, hey, check out this where he explains what he means with Mac Daddy. She's like, no, we have to kill him. It's like, this, but that makes no sense. This is, you know, there is a thing of freedom of speech, you know, whether you like it or not, let the guy talk. And now you're just bringing him more to the forefront by exposing him to everybody. Not discussable. Not discussable.
Well, that's the way it is with the true Obama bot.
Yeah, I guess. So anyway.
But it is a little incendiary, I would say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but
it's funny. I think there's humor there. I don't know why people just don't think see the humor.
I see the humor, and that's what I tried to keep telling her. I said, don't you just see the humor? She's like, there is nothing funny about that. I said, the guy's wearing a purple dress. Come on, get real for a minute here. No, she couldn't see that.
Oh, well.
Yowza. Let's try on Sunday maybe to discuss, because there have been some updates with my eminent domain situation, which are quite interesting. Because there's some huge government scam happening in the United Republic of California here.
Well, I also have right after the Obama speech, to the second, bing, the phone rings, and I got a call from a survey person, and I put the recorder on, so we have the
good.
Little
survey good, good, good. And did you talk to the survey person?
Yeah.
Excellent.
I took the survey.
Oh, great. Love it. Coming to you from the Crackpot Command Center, located in the minimum security containment cell, under a real threat of eminent domain in San Francisco, California, Gitmo Nation West. I'm Adam Curry.
And from a warming trend, Northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll be here once again on Sunday, around 9 o'clock Pacific time, on No Agenda.